The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you, sister?
I am doing amazing. Thanks so much for having me.
It is an absolute pleasure. We've been circling each other for a little while now, and finally we get to have a conversation. And I can see in the background you've got your book, What's Wrong with My Child? And straight away, that's a pretty confronting title for a book. How did you come up with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, the first book that I wrote was titled America is Infected. And then the publisher thought that might be a bit brash, so we toned it down, cut a lot of the science out, and made it just kind of more palpable for the masses, that, you know, so we could connect with parents and they could understand these medical concepts that, you know, sometimes we get so overwhelmed by.
And these medical concepts that you talk about, tell me, take us through the journey of what do you mean by that exactly? And I mean, I understand, but for our listeners and viewers, you might want to baby step through this, the chronological order or the timeline of how you came to write this book and the impetus. And yeah, we'll start there.
Absolutely. Okay, so I have a science background, biology, chemistry degree, and then somewhat of a master's in sports medicine, which landed me in the spa world, body contouring, facial contouring. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the business aspect. I really enjoyed the science, so much so that, like, after being in the industry for a decade or so, I developed my own cellulite reduction device and also formulated a skincare line. And so, you know, I just really enjoyed the cellular level of how things work in terms of, you know, making people, you know, look better. And it was about 2010 when my career was in full swing. I was traveling the world doing spa consulting and helping small business owners and large ones alike, when my son got a case of strep, group A strep. The odd thing was, is like typically with strep throat, you have a sore throat, but he didn't. He just had a really bad stomach ache. But after we took him to the doctor, we found out that he indeed had strep, and they put him on antibiotics. So he slowly began to get better physically. Then about a couple weeks after the antibiotics, he began acting very strangely, very bizarre, buttoning his shirt, walking across the transition strip over and over. And this is just like all of a sudden. came in and said, Mom, you've got to dry my jeans. They're still wet when they were perfectly dry. Boil my toothbrush, all these odd things. I began to get a little concerned. So I contacted the pediatrician and mentioned the situation. He didn't seem worried at all. The following day, he began to build this like crazy huge tent. I mean, like every single sheet and blanket in the whole house, like lining the chairs up. Anyway, I began to get a little more concerned, called again. No problem. It's fine. You're overreacting. Day three, he is behind the chair in the living room. It's about Christmas time. And he thinks bugs are crawling on him. His pupils are huge. He thinks people are looking in the window. So I called a colleague of mine who knew my son. He came over to the house and he said, no, there's something really wrong. So I call again to the pediatrician's office. This time a different physician was on call. And he said, I would take your son straight to the emergency room at Vanderbilt. This sounds like an acute onset of PANDAS. At the time, I didn't realize that PANDAS stood for pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with streptococcal infections, which is a mouthful. But it was like, I Googled it real quick, of course, because you're like, what? And it's like all nothing but panda bears, because this syndrome had just recently been discussed in June of that year by the NIH. And so nobody really knew much about it. So I had one website to go on that said, basically, it's similar to rheumatic heart. And that's where strep can attack the heart, except this is with the brain cells. So I was like, I immediately knew what that meant, because confused antibodies attacking your heart and then now attacking your brain is very scary as a parent. So we put him in the car, took him to Vanderbilt, thinking that they knew what PANDAS was and they would do the proper treatment and get in there. And then all these medical professionals come into the emergency room, neurologists, infectious disease, psychiatrist. I didn't realize one of them was a psychiatrist. And ordered a lot of tests and decided to admit him. They did a spinal tap and several other treatments and said that he was still strep positive, even though he'd had the antibiotics. And so they did intravenous antibiotics for 3 days and the psychosis slowly resolved. And in they come, it's time to discharge him. And I said, discharge him? Like what caused it? You know, what is that? How did you resolve the psychosis? Well, you know, we don't really know. So then I started getting to mama bear mode and I was like, I think we need to do a few more tests. And so we ran anti-DNA B titer, which time I didn't even know what it was. I just saw the website. That was the common denominator. Those came back super high and they still discharged him. They discharged him with a psychiatric medication called Zoloft, which is an SSRI inhibitor, and told me to take him to cognitive behavioral therapy, which is talk therapy. Right then, my jaw just dropped and I thought, and we're taking this child to therapy for an infection? And so at that point, I really got suspicious of the whole thing, found out that it was a super controversial syndrome, probably because infections causing psychiatric symptoms might not be something that, you know, people would like to discuss, but that was in turn the case. And so he didn't get any more antibiotics. And from that moment on, any infection that he had, strep, viruses, anything, he would get neuropsychiatric symptoms instead of physical symptoms. So he didn't get a fever. He didn't get a cough. He didn't get the runny nose. None of that. He would get OCD, lose focus, loss of executive functioning. I mean, and eventually, because it went on for so long, being 3 years with no antibiotics or correct treatment, you know, it ended up escalating to the OCD, having hoarding and compulsions and psychosis and rage and schizophrenia. I mean, just this onslaught of symptoms. And I was like, so wait, this is like with the flu, you get X, Y, and Z, or this strain, you get X, Y, and Z. But in this syndrome, the flu, you might have schizophrenia, OCD, and loss of focus. But then another organism, you would have 3 or 4 different psych symptoms. And then they would resolve. And I just was baffled. And nobody was really acknowledging it or treating it properly. And so because we couldn't get him the medical treatment he needed, and the pediatrician eventually fired me because I continued to like pursue medical, he ended up tangled up with the juvenile court systems over here, and it went from bad to worse. because he ended up in the detention center and solitary confinement for 5 weeks, got PTSD on top of the PANDAS. And so it was just, it was a nightmare. I mean, it was 4 years of pure hell. And
how old was your son at the time?
He was 10 with his first strep infection, 13 with the second strep infection. So each strep infection that he got, the behaviors got worse and more extreme and, you know, less manageable. So we're involved with juvenile court and we got this horrendous judge. And by this time, they're telling me that he needs all new, or basically IVIG, which is immunoglobulin treatment antibodies, which was confusing because really I had never heard there was anything wrong with his immune system. So how could giving him new antibodies help with this? But we did it. It was like $20,000. And then as we left the doctor's office in Washington, D.C., which was 18 hours away from our home, we had driven there. She just looked at me and said, he's going to get worse before he gets better. At which point I just started to cry because I thought there's absolutely no way he'd get worse. He's crashed cars. He stays up for days on end. I mean, it was just really like managing old Yeller with the leash, you know, with the yarn string. It was impossible to keep him safe and everyone else safe. And, you know, there was absolutely zero support from our judicial system or medical system. So push came to shove, and I'd taken him to so many doctors. And even though they'd heard of it and they heard to give antibiotics, and we got him on some antibiotics, I just knew in the end that nobody was going to come up with the answer. And it was a very long, lonely road. And feeling somewhat desperate, I went and got every single medical record since his birth and just sat down and started to read every page by page and put it all together and came up with the solution for our family.
I can't even imagine what that was like for you. And
It was a lot. It was a lot.
But no doubt it was, it's you know, I don't say this lightly, but perfect in the fact that it was you and you had the resilience and the tenacity and determination and the love and to keep going.
Absolutely. And it's just like, what do? I think that survival of the fittest kicks in and you realize like you're either going to do this or we're all not going to make it, because by this time I'm having also symptoms. My hair is falling out. I'm losing a lot of weight. My fingers are going numb. All those things you kind of talk about or hear about associated with stress. And I thought, well, certainly stress could be, you know, a problem here. And so I did kind of ignore it until a little bit later when I ended up also going to some doctors and was diagnosed with complex regional pain syndrome, which is like this incurable disease, you know, that you've got like my skin felt like it was on fire. I mean, it was brutal. And so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, okay, why do we have these most bizarre, extreme, incurable, unbeknownst illnesses? And I've owned a spa and I've raised my children. I worked out literally every day. I didn't have a drink, nothing when I was pregnant. I mean, I worked out the day I gave birth. So none of these like answers that people are saying, oh, this is the cause of it, applied in our situation. And I thought, well, if we're the sickest, then I don't know if it is any of these things. You know, and so with that in mind, and also the fact that I had adopted, or we had adopted, two children that weren't my genetics, you know, they didn't have the same genes. And when they started coming down with symptoms of their own, and then the daughter, my adopted daughter, came down and she started acting awful, like that. It's called oppositional defiance disorder. And she was never like that. She started staying up all night, and she came downstairs and leaned forward and said, my ear hurts. And she leaned forward and there was a boil behind her ear. And I thought, whatever this is contagious. I mean, I just knew it. And so then I thought, okay, I've got to figure out what is contagious in our home. And took her to the doctor. And by this time, I'm like learning the words to say and not say. So I'm like, she has a boil behind her ear. I didn't mention that she was acting like, you know, horrible, horrible child along with the boil. I just said, can we culture the boil? Thinking that could be a clue. No, but we can put her on antibiotics. And he put her on antibiotics. And within 5 to 7 days, the boil had gone down. And so in her behavior, she was right back to being kind, sweet, respectful. And I thought, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy, you know, and this is definitely environmental. So with all the court stuff going on, the judge tried to take custody from me of this one child that was sick, not the other three, just that one. Because with her putting him in solitary confinement, I think she got a little bit nervous that I would take legal action. And so then I had to fight even harder, find a lawyer to make sure I kept custody. And in the midst of all this, I drove all night to this PANDAS conference in Atlanta. And I listened, I found this one doctor, Dr. Trifoletti. And he said, to treat PANDAS, you've got to find the infection. And I was like, that's what I've been trying to do. You know, like I've been trying to do that. So how do we do that? And so he wasn't taking new patients. So I just took my little labs up and begged and cried. He agreed to help. And so I'll never forget, he sent, I was like, I need numbers. We need labs, like a lot of labs. And so he sent me this extensive lab order. And I'll forget, like I've had a 15-minute visit with my son where I was able to go get him. I got him in the car. I took him straight to the hospital. Got all those labs drawn, told him not to say a word, and gave him back. So anyway, by the time she had to return custody to me, we had some clues. You know, we had some clues that this was something to do with his sinuses. Because, you know, when you think about it, like strep throat, it's strep throat in everyone. So why is strep throat different in him? I was like, there's got to be a variable. It's the variable. So I went down for like 6 months on this pathway of streptococcal pneumonia serotypes. I probably got way too wrapped up in that one because there was resistant ones and superbugs, and I kept trying to figure out which one it was. And along the way, we would get different kinds of antibiotics. I would give them to him and he would get a little better. Like this one psych symptom would like improve, and the other ones were still there. So then I started to put it all together that like, wait a minute. Antibiotics aren't just antibiotics. They're all targeting like different pathogens and like, you know, different tissues. And so then I started to learn the classes of antibiotics and try to figure out, okay, well, if this worked, this antibiotic targets these things. So maybe he has this, try to work the problem backwards, you know? Anyway, out of all those different solutions, I came to learn that 19A, this resistant strain of streptococcal pneumonia could only be killed by levoquin, which is like considered kind of a really strong antibiotic. I didn't know how in the world I was going to get a doctor to give my son. I mean, he's like, his nose is red right here. He's like kicking boards. He's broken a toe. He's like 13, 14 by now. He's hoarding medical supplies. So like, I'm like, okay, I can do this. So we go and we check into the emergency room and I take my CDC piece of literature to this physician's assistant. And I'm like, my son has this. It's right here on the labs. He needs this. And at the time I didn't really know what I was even asking for. And he goes, you want me to give your son levofloxacin that could rupture his tendons? And I was like, yes. Give it to him. He's got 19A. We've tried everything else. I said, and right now he's a wreck. And so he examined him and he said he has a raging sinus infection, but he didn't have any sinus symptoms. The only thing he had was like red right here. So I started to put that together and I was like, okay, so behind the ethmoid sinuses, when he's really bad, this is what happens. It equals a sinus infection. Long story short, he ended up giving us the Levaquin. Within a couple of days, my son was the calmest he'd like ever been in years. And I walked in and I was like, oh my gosh, that's it. And he even said, Mom, I feel totally normal. So I was so excited. I gave him the course. And then a week later, it started to come back. And I thought, we need more than 7 days worth. So then I started to like dig in. How can I get more? Am I making it more resistant by giving him the short course? Why did it work and stop working? I know that that's the answer. So I just went and got him one more course and he got good again. So then I knew that's the second time. I was like, okay, so how does Levaquin fix psychiatric symptoms? You know? So he's escalating again because we're done with the second round of Levaquin. And I start thinking there's more to this puzzle. So I went back to the medical records and all the labs and I flipped through and I found that when he was at his worst, he also had a mycoplasma pneumonia infection. Now, mycoplasma pneumonia is not talked about very often. I mean, it is the causative factor in walking pneumonia, which is supposed to be like benign and kind of passes in a couple weeks or whatever. It can be found in ear infections, but there just wasn't a whole lot of data on this organism, which I found quite odd because, I mean, just to paint the picture for you, I like worn out the seat in my chair researching day and night, like 24 hours a day. I mean, I'm Googling everything, clicking every single link, and I've seen all kinds of organisms and really nothing on this one. And I'm like, okay, that's odd. And so I found one paper from a guy at a University of Alabama published in 2004, talking about how this organism can be implicated in autoimmune diseases. So by now I'm pretty certain that my son definitely has an autoimmune disease in the brain. There, that's what I'm hearing. And, but I can't find anything else except in other countries like India. I found some stuff in India. You know, I found some stuff in, I can't remember where else, but I just started to have that feeling you have when something's just not right. You know, like a suspicion of like, you know, this is just so anyway, by then I'm like labeled as crazy in all the medical records at like all the hospitals around here and all the doctors. Oh, that's fine. So I thought to myself, well, you've never really called the researchers. All you've been doing is going to doctors, but who tells them what to do? You need to go up the food chain one step. So I call the research department at Vanderbilt and I'm like, yes, I have some questions about an intracellular organism, mycoplasma pneumonia. And the lady on the phone says, we don't have anyone here that researches that, but we do have someone here that researches chlamydia pneumonia. So I'm like Googling really quick, is it intracellular? Because I need to understand this intracellular organism thing. And it is intracellular. I'm like, I'll talk to him. So what are the odds that A, she picked up the phone, B, she didn't really understand what I was saying. And that's what she sends me to this researcher. And, you know, D, he picks up the phone. So I'm a little bit like taken back and I'm just trying to compose myself. I don't even know what to say. And I'm like, yes, sir. I'm doing some research on intracellular organisms, specifically mycoplasma pneumonia. And the odd thing was I couldn't find the test for mycoplasma pneumonia because every time I thought, I'm just going to test my kids myself. Instead of fighting with all these doctors. So I'm like, test for mycoplasma, test kit. What I found was that the only test kits were those that would test cancer cell culture lines. So I'm like thinking to myself, this is another odd thing. Like, wait a minute. This mycoplasma pneumonia is just like raining down from the sky and it's getting in all the labs and all the cell cancer lines. And I'm just like, shut that door, Elizabeth. Don't go there. You need to stay here and get your kids better. So I just closed that door. And I, you know, talking to the researcher and I'm like, I need some more information on mycoplasma pneumonia. And he says to me very solemnly, he says, I don't research mycoplasma pneumonia. In fact, the only researcher I know in this entire country that researches that organism is Dr. Garth Nicholson. I said, okay, great. Give me his number. I'll take the kids out. We'll go see this doctor. He's like, well, it's not that simple. And I'm like, of course it's not that simple. So he gives me the website or how to find the website. So I'm Googling imed.org. This website comes up and it's like, I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about Dr. Nicholson because he's so brilliant, you know, but the website is like a little, you know, there's not a lot there other than his research articles. Fortunately, I had gone to school and taken biochemistry, cell biology, something about the time that he had discovered the phospholipid membrane of the cell. So I was familiar with him as like a genius because I was like, Dr. Nicholson. So then, of course, I'm going to be more open to what he's saying because I know his accomplishments. So then I sat there clicking on every link, hundreds of like research documents, and I find the story of what happened and how this mycoplasma pneumonia became so dangerous and pathogenic. And then I figured out how we'd gotten it. And so what I came to believe and learn was that back in the 80s, the DOJ, the Texas prison system, Baylor University, the Army Pathology Lab, they had all, you know, I wasn't there. I can't say why they did it, but apparently they were developing some weapons for, I don't know. I'm not going to pigeonhole myself, but I have some ideas. Anyway, they genetically modified this organism. And it started with Mycoplasma fermentans, which is a benign organism that's found in the soil, typically. They took that organism, and the reason they chose this particular bacteria is because it has the smallest of genomes, only like 464 genes. So it's much easier to manipulate than the larger bacteria. And what they did was they weaponized it. They made it heat resistant, so fevers can't kill it. They made it antibiotic resistant, so it's not killed with antibiotics, or at least the regular course of it. Then they also spliced parts of different viruses into the genome of the Mycoplasma fermentans. So you've got like this Russian cocktail type organism that is very difficult to diagnose. It's insidious because it can express the virus. It can express like this, and it can't be killed by the traditional immune responses. And so understandably, they were testing this organism in the Texas prison systems on death row inmates. But what they didn't stop to consider was even though the fermentin strain wasn't airborne, the Mycoplasma pneumonia was. So because of genetic transference, you know, this fermentins passed its most virulent parts over to the pneumonia, became airborne. And then like that year, in the little town of Huntsville, Texas, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, and ALS skyrocketed. And it was found at a rate of 5,000% higher than the rest of the country. And so from thence, the organism has spread, you know, throughout our country. And I knew that it was true, but still it's almost like, you know, trust but verify, because it all made sense. The whole story made sense, especially knowing that we had taken in my ex-brother-in-law in 2003, who was down in that system. And when he came to move in with us, we were just trying to help him get back on his feet. He seemed like he was doing well. Within 7 to 10 days, we all just got deathly sick and ended up with these boils on us. And it had all just gone from there very slowly. It takes 9 to 18 months to develop the symptoms. And so things had escalated over the decade to the point where they were at this point in time. My ex-brother-in-law was still alive. So I called him, asked him when he was down there, did he get sick? Asked him some key questions that didn't tell him the story, see if it lined up. I was just like, okay, I did not expect this. Of course, I'm devastated at this time, thinking we're infected with a bioweapon that I mean, how are we going to get rid of it? But still, there's that nagging voice as a scientist. It's like, I still got to see it. You know, everything is lining up. So I continued to read and read the website and found that
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.